This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer at Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hey everyone, I'm Brad Parsons, Vice President of Market Operations at Baptist.
Well, folks, if you've been listening to this podcast, we are on part three of Shifting Towards Unorthodoxy, and we've been talking with Michael Hine. And so this has just been such a fascinating conversation. But before we jump right into it, Michael, if folks have been listening, they probably know who you are, but could you briefly tell us a little bit about you and your background?
I'm a general internal medicine physician by training, got into healthcare executive leadership. Here towards the end of my career, I'm serving as an executive leadership coach with a company named Medi Leadership.
Well, Michael, thanks again for being with us for part three of this series. And it's just been fascinating. I think it's really, we've had great dialogue on podcasts and off podcasts, and look forward to continuing today for our listeners. I know last time we talked a little bit about one of the mindsets in part three of your book, and it was called the first work. But I'm hoping that we can start here and you can kind of frame up a little bit about part three as it relates and how it differs from the first and second parts of the book.
Yeah, the motivation for writing the book, I think, for me, mostly is about the difficulty, the pain, if you will, that I get to see and participate in with the leaders that I coach. Like the curtain is pulled back and I'm working with these real human beings, these executive leaders. And one of the things that strike me is how hard healthcare leadership is. And when I say hard, I mean, it's emotionally painful, exhausting, draining. It impacts our relationships. It impacts our physical health, impacts our spiritual health. And I'm still a physician at heart. So that touches me and I'm concerned about that. So part three was acknowledging that there's something about complex environments, complex organizations that are particularly challenging for us as human beings. And we mentioned some of them in part two. I wanted to really give a couple of ways to be well within complexity. You can't change it. You can't fight against it. You can't control it. All you can do is participate in it. And within your participation, it's difficult because there's so much uncertainty. For one, and some of the things we want to do that come with anxiety related to that don't work well. So how can we as leaders be well with complexity? And that's really what part three was about, was what are some things for us to be focused in on? What mindsets can we hold that would position us well? The first work of leadership being the first mindset within part three. And as we talked about last time, I've got quite a bit of juice about that, and it is a topic that I cover with every single leader I work with.
So tell us, what is the first work? Just again, I think going into that and spending a few minutes on it is very important.
Yeah, well, let's just talk about why. That's kind of an odd term, isn't it? The first work, like, what is that kind of wonky phrasing? Well, it's intentional. Like, first means first. It's foundational. It comes before anything else. And work means it is work. I like to say it this way, not that I'm a big fan of work-life balance, that concept I'm not a big fan of, but it's so prevalent. It's a useful handle. I said it's the first work because it's not on the life side of the work-life balance. It's on the work side for a leader. And the main components of the first work are physical fitness, sleep, diet, exercise, relational fitness, taking care of and managing, investing in the relationships that matter to you, some spiritual aspect. And that's a broad term where we rejuvenate and we get a sense of the broader purpose of life, something bigger than ourselves. Paying attention to those, spending the time, putting those first before you do work, whatever else is on your calendar. That's what the first work is about. And I'll say this, I totally get it. That's super difficult to do. And there are a lot of reasons why it's difficult to do, but that does not change the necessity. The science is clear. If we are not well, if we're not rested, if we're not recovered, if we're not paying attention to these things as a leader, there is no physical, psychological way for you to show up at your best. And what complex organizations need from you as a leader is for you to show up at your best. So that's why I call it the first work. And if you have more, I mean, I'd love to talk about it some more. I could talk about it for 4 hours.
No, that's, look, it's really good. And again, I want to brag on our organization for a minute because we're a faith-based, not-for-profit organization. But we're rooted in our faith, and it really is a service positioning towards the care that we deliver. We've got a vision statement that says where love abounds so that God can do the impossible, to create expert systems of care where love abounds so that God can do the impossible. I just think that this mindset, it really goes into the first two mindsets of part three about the focus on the leader. And around why are we doing this to begin with? Like, and so I just love working for the organization that's important, that helps me manage the complexity of what I've dealt with in this space. And I think it's super important, again, in dealing with human beings. I mean, that's what we're in the business of doing, which adds to the complexity, but also why this first work is so important. Michael, so thank you for sharing.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you brought up mindset two in part three, and that is purpose. And I want to spend a little bit of time with that. Before we go there, just one comment about the first work. And I think there's a unique responsibility for leaders in this space, because it's not what we say. It's not what we aspire to in voice in our mission statements and our purpose statements, and even what leaders might say, something like, hey, don't answer my email. Just because I send you an email over the weekend does not mean that I want you to answer my emails. I mean, it's what we do as leaders that give permission for everybody else around us to pay attention and invest in and do the first work. And if leaders are running 24/7, for them to keep up, then it doesn't really, it's nice that they say and aspire to pay attention to the first work, but the way that that person's pattern behaviors are observed by those around them, the message is, yeah, I get it, but that's not how we do things here. So I too will work 24/7. And there's actually a broader cultural narrative, we can go there, about 24/7 is what's expected. You know, if you don't want to do that, then I'll just fire you and I'll go find somebody who's willing to do it. So it's not easy. Now, to purpose, it does ground us. And when things are so uncertain, future, it does give us a sense of direction. And in the book, I say, purpose is trustworthy. That means we can rely on it. We can depend on it as leaders. We can relax our need for control because we can trust other human beings who understand and share the purpose to do the good work necessary. May not be the way we would have imagined it, but we can trust that they would do it. And that just, I mean, me just saying that takes the pressure off this old administrator's shoulders, you know, yeah. Like, okay, we're in it together. And that feels a lot lighter than we got to stick to my vision. And I have a lot to say about vision in that chapter as well. But.
Really good. Really good. So there's so many directions I want to go.
Yes.
so I'm trying to pick my battle. So let's just do a little riffing. And that was just my excuse to want to use that word and make myself sound cool. So my kids, I can tell them I use the word riff. But I think you're so right. You know, when you think about the first work, many times people with good intentions, they may talk about one piece of it. It's very popular today to talk about psychological safety, and I think it should be talked about. It's very important. We happen to practice a skill that we call TWI job relations. It's been around since 1940. The thing that's so interesting about that is it goes back to that first work. If we're a complex socio-technical system, And of course we are. If we were not, robots would be running everything. Because we are a complex socio-technical system, we know this is going to happen. We know for a fact there will always be problems as long as there are people. It's not because people are bad. It's because of that second law of thermodynamics, that everything is in this state of entropy. It's degrading. So there's always going to be problems. They may not be big problems. They'll become big problems if you ignore them. But how do we respond to them? How do we restore that person? How do we make that person all that they can possibly be? And we see that all the time, right? We see different individuals going through different cycles of their work. They may be getting burned out. That may be because the leader's putting too much on them. They may be having home issues happening at their house. But how do we restore that person? So I think it's so important, because in some respects, if you think about healthcare being a complex socio-technical system, then beneath that, you have all of these little subsystems going on. And one of those subsystems is the human, right? All by themselves. How do they relate to other people? How do we have relationships with other people? How do we, and then here comes purpose, you know, do we give them something that they're inspired for, that they know why they're waking up to come to work? So I think this is so important, Michael, that, you know, that we understand this. And I think one of the reasons it's important is I was watching this show the other day with my family, and they had this bomb that they needed to defuse. But the problem was that bomb was complex. If they cut the wrong wire, it's not going to go well. And so that's very much what we're dealing with, right? We're trying to work this complex system so that we take people, the most important piece, and the task, that's the technical part of socio-technical, and we move it forward. And we want to have purpose. You know, I mean, I remember one of my very first jobs, I won't say what it was or what company it was, but I remember hating the product that they made. I hated it. Terrible. And I had a leader pull me aside once. They said, "You may not think this now, and you're really young, Skip, but what you do, whether it be making a product or servicing people, it's going to matter to you. And so you need to take that into consideration." And I got out of that company and did something that was much more meaningful. And in healthcare, you know, the thing I love about healthcare is it's people are called to this work. I mean, they do just incredibly inspirational work. And so anyway, I don't know where I'm going with this, Michael, except to say amen and amen, because I think all of this stuff is interdependent and interconnected, and it matters. It's not just about making a person feel good or being nice. It's no, that person is a part of a system. And are we making them healthy and well? And do we give them a purpose to drive towards and to fuel in that direction? I'm sure I probably took us completely off context, but I think you're spot on.
I'll use that as a springboard to, you know, to move forward this appreciation for the importance of purpose and the trustworthiness in environments that are complex, because the uncertainty is high. And let's just take this down to the front line. Let's just say it's a nurse working in the OR in the same day surgery center, and there's a rule or policy that has been in place, and something's going on right there in the moment, and that person has to make sense of what is this rule or this policy, and how do I deploy that? I have good intentions. I want to do the right thing, but this doesn't really fit this situation as I'm understanding it. Then what we want to be able to, I think, is to for folks to have the confidence that they can make a decision driven by what's in the best interest for this human being that aligns with the purpose I share with the organization and the leaders around me. And yeah, I don't know if it quite fits exactly the protocol that we talked about, but this is driven by purpose. So it's that ability, and I can hear the bells and whistles going off from our quality people and our HRO people, and I hear all that, and still, and we cannot control that moment with a policy or procedure. It is always a human being, a social human being, making sense of their interaction with a technical system that involves another social human being. And that requires clarity of purpose to make good choices.
Such a good example. And again, I've got so many examples that we could go to, but I do want to, I got to touch on one of my favorite mindsets in part three, which is the value of storytelling. And yeah. So, Michael, I want you to talk about this, because we all know, we've all been around somebody that's great at telling a story, what that can evoke and how that can provide meaningful context to the work that we have at hand. But I'm curious. I haven't gotten to that piece yet, so I want you to share with our listeners a little bit of preview of Mindset 9.
Well, you're exactly right. The stories are potent. They're potent motivators, and great leaders draw upon stories to connect with and relate with others. And that's not what this particular mindset is especially about. It's a more focused perspective about, really, I'm reminding leaders this thing. Remember, your sense-making story is always incomplete. That means there's something about human cognition, our ability to fully understand everything that's going on around us, make good sense of. We create, our brains are story-making machines, making sense of what's transpiring. And in complex environments, there's so much going on that we cannot see all of the interdependent relationships. Therefore, our sense-making stories as an individual leader is always incomplete. That's one key part about that chapter. And the second part about this is, be careful with simple stories. So simple stories have a direct cause-effect relationship. A happened and B resulted. Simple stories always have a villain and a hero. Usually the hero is us and the villain is somebody else. Yeah. And the third part is, there's always a beginning and an end. One of my favorite examples is Joe Biden gets elected president. A few months later, gas prices are $5 a gallon. Before he was president, like 6 months before, they were at $3 a gallon. And we saw headlines or on social media. Look, what happened? We elect Joe Biden and gas prices go to $5. It's a classic example of a simple story. And as leaders in complex environments, those are traps for us. And then the last thing I bring up in that chapter, a way to escape that, is carry three stories with you. Like, your first story, even if it's simple, just notice it. Say, okay, what's another story that I can create with exactly the same information, but make sense of it in a different way? And that tends to help us stay open-minded and curious and humble about what's going on. And for me, that is one of the most important ways to be well with complexity. Now, I have to say one more thing. I've got to acknowledge where I got those ideas from. They're not from my head, but those are from Jennifer Garvey Berger, one of my favorite authors in complexity thinking. And I just think it's one of those things I share with all of my leaders, and many, many, many of them find that really helpful, especially that carry three stories with you, because my sense-making story is always incomplete.
Really good point. We've had Jennifer on the podcast, actually.
Oh, you have? Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a fan. Yeah.
We are too. She's a great thinker. You know, let me ask a question there. I think you're spot on with your comment about storytelling, especially the example that you gave with the gas prices. I think the other thing that that doesn't help is that doesn't help us be good thinkers, right? Because life's not that simple, you know, and so I could go off on that, but I won't. But I think another thing, I want to get your thoughts on this, Michael. I think also sometimes understanding someone else's story, inviting them to tell us their story, you know, because then the relationship is being built, especially if I'm asking open-ended questions, questions that I don't really know the answer to, you know, and I'm willing to listen to understand versus listening to respond. So I think in addition to telling a story, and I guess I would be thinking, what's the purpose of my story? What do I want to accomplish with telling the story? I think the other thing is inviting them in to tell me your story. I mean, is that somewhat correct, or yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I would where I would take that is taking on multiple perspectives. Perspectives are other people's incomplete sense-making stories. And so as a leader, I know mine's incomplete. But if I'm curious and I listen to learn from another individual, that's my favorite language, listen to learn, I can create a more complete sense-making story. I can take on the perspectives of others. Now, notice I said a more complete. It's still going to be incomplete in complexity. Like we can put a room of 10 people around there and we still aren't going to see it all. But we can, if we're listening and we're curious, we'll be able to pick up more of that story. And that brings up really the last mindset. And it's a great place to end the 10 mindset is this notion of curiosity. And I do have a bit of I'm a little bit critical about curiosity because it's such a common vernacular now for leaders. It's almost become a tactical ploy. Like we all know if you're listening, look people in the eye, lean into, nod your head, acknowledge with So people know how to act like they're listening because good leaders listen. And they're curious, so they ask those kind of questions, like they're asking questions. But that's not the kind of curiosity I'm talking about in the book that suits complexity well. I think I use the word reverent curiosity. Reverent is an old word. It means I stand in awe of, I stand in regard, high regard of the other. It's like what a stance a student takes to a teacher that they respect highly. I'm listening to you. I need to learn from you. And I'm curious, genuinely, literally curious about who you are, why you think the way you do. How is it you came there? What's your life experiences that brought you up to this point? That's reverent curiosity. And it is a superpower in complexity, because it allows you to gather those more complete stories, those multiple perspectives, and take them on. And that positions you to stay open to whatever transpires, because in complexity, you're not going to know. You have some ideas and some theories and hopes, but the future is being created in the moment as you're making sense of everything together. So stay curious. Hey,
Michael, I love this. And I've been using the word curious a lot more. I love how you built into the final mindset, into curiosity. I'm curious, you know, we have principles that govern our management system. And we talk about people principles, and we talk about empathy, and we talk about humility, and we talk about respect. And those three things help build trust with teams. But specifically, I'm thinking about humility and empathy and how they relate to really incomplete stories of what we think is out there and how they relate to curiosity.
Yeah, I have a definition of humility that I think I mentioned in the book, but just think about this. If we truly believe that our sense-making story, our sense of what is real, of what really happened, of what others are thinking, all of that goes on with us every day. If we really believe and hold an acknowledgement that it's always an incomplete story, isn't that like at least in the core essence of what being humble is? Yes. It's not saying I don't, you know, it's not like a false humility, like I don't know anything, or You know, it's like, I know some things. I think I know some things, but I know they're always incomplete. That just puts you as a humble leader. Amen.
Like, I love it.
Yes.
Really, really good. Really good. Mark, you know,
I have to say one more thing. There's a quote that I love to say, and of course, in the moment, it escapes me, but it is, if I can paraphrase, cherish curiosity more than certainty. Mm-hmm. Cherish curiosity more than certainty. That, to me, seems almost like a song of humility, a leader's heart saying, God, I want to cherish curiosity more than certainty.
Really, really good, Mike. I recently had a pretty thorough conversation with a renowned author and thinker, Nancy Klein. Did a large body of work called Time to Think. And we had this discussion around the difference between curiosity and being interested.
I love that.
And I'll send it to you. But the thing that was so amazing to me, she even went on to write about it so that she, and the line, if you use that metaphor, was so thin, you're walking on a beam, because they are related, right? Mm-hmm. But I loved your comment of reverent curiosity. I really love that a lot. Because if I'm having reverent curiosity, it isn't really about me. It isn't exactly about me getting the answers. Yes. I'm actually interested in where you're going to go next in your comments, because I don't know where you're going
to
go.
Imagine what that feels like to be on the receiving end
of
another human being that is a leader, a CEO who is walking that as often as they can with the people around them, approaching all of these other whole human beings that they're interacting with in meaningful relationship to accomplish meaningful work together. And their stance is, I'm reverently curious with all the human beings I'm around there. If you're on the receiving end of that, that is like, you feel, you just feel, wow.
Well, not only do you feel wow, but let's even take it farther. If people feel like there's more to lose than there is to gain, they will be silent. And you lose out on the information that they have within their little subsystem that you don't know about. And so you gain if you're just willing to be curious and interested, and you get surprised too, like, what's going on?
Yeah. So wait, really? I literally ran across a leader. We were talking about being curious and asking questions and seeking other perspectives. And he literally said, he said to me, deadpan serious, why would I do that? They might think that I'm wrong.
Okay. Well, so to me, I mean, Michael, I love this conversation, and I love that how, you know, we've got kind of words and principles that we use, and you've articulated so well some different ones. But today, still, there's this belief, there's still alive and well in leadership today, the belief that I'm supposed to show up and be right all the time.
So there's again, we mentioned this in the Orthodox, and that is definitely the Orthodox view,
right,
is that leaders have the right answers, and that is my responsibility. But the thing that I will tell leaders, and sometimes it's hard for them to hear, is say, look, in complexity, right answers don't exist. So quit trying to find them. The thing that exists are many possibly good answers. And you're not going to know if they're good or not until you try them out and see what happens. So don't get trapped by rightness. Yeah.
Fantastic, Michael. That was fantastic. Actually, 30 minutes has already went by. Well, listen, next week we will have our fourth and final episode on shifting towards unorthodoxy. And like a lot of our conversations, we don't know where they're going to go, but I'm sure we'll unpack some more things out of the great book that Michael wrote on shifting towards unorthodoxy. We're going to talk more about that, and we're going to think more about that. But until next week, Michael, thank you so much for spending time with us. Thank you for kind of wrestling mentally with us and getting us to take on new considerations and new thoughts, or should I say, helping us connect the dots. So thank you so much.
Thank you.